Please stand by. Night school starts in just a few minutes. Night school starts at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. We'll be underway in just a few minutes. Listening to Night School. We'll be underway. The bell will ring in just a few minutes. Night School Season 6 kicks off in just a few minutes. Night School Season 6 gets underway at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. We'll be right back.
Ring the bell. It's time for Night School, the racing industry's national online fan education and player development program. Here's your host, Jeremy Plunk.
Pleasant good evening, everyone, and welcome to Night School. As the 26th week of the 2016 season kicks off our fall semester and continues our how-to series that we started this spring, our fall semester return features How to Handicap Kentucky Downs. It's a lucrative 5-day meet in Franklin, Kentucky that started on Saturday and has 4 more days of rich and lucrative racing still to come for the meet. This 90-minute podcast will serve as a primer on how to handicap all aspects of Kentucky Downs racing, which features a unique European-style turf course, major turf purses, and big field sizes that lure handicappers to the action. Also, a very low takeout structure is outstanding for those getting involved in the paramutual pursuits. We'll talk much more about Kentucky Downs tonight with our panel of experts, which includes track announcer John Lees, paddock handicapper Gary West, and online handicapper and curator of the Downey Profile, Dick Downey. All three will join us throughout the course of the night, and we'll also have some classic Night School clips tonight about how to handicap turf racing from the one and only Bob Neumeyer, a longtime friend of the Night School program, and we'll also listen in to what makes a good turf horse. You're handicapping all turf racing at Kentucky Downs. Trainer Brett Calhoun, a Breeders' Cup winner on the grass, tells you what makes a good turf horse in one of our classic Night School clips tonight. That's all part of what we're doing. Be sure to download the free study materials at horseplayernow.com as well if you're listening to the live or archive version of this podcast. We've got a great show in store for you tonight. A little bit about Kentucky Downs. Kentucky Downs was founded in 1990. They first raced thoroughbreds in 1992 at what was formerly known as the Dueling Grounds. The track was renamed Kentucky Downs in 1998, but it got its original name Dueling Grounds because back in the 1800s, it was legal to have duels in Kentucky, but not in Tennessee. So the duels actually took place across the state line in the Kentucky jurisdiction, and Dueling Grounds was a place where many a fight was won and many a fight was lost. Hopefully your parimutuel battles go much better than the old duels at the Dueling Grounds. Kentucky Downs now offers one of the richest, most lucrative overnight purse programs in the country because of year-round simulcasting and a five-day schedule each racing season. Corey Johnson and Roy Reed took over ownership of Kentucky Downs in 2007 and made it one of the most player-centric racetracks in America. HANA, the Horse Players Association of North America, has ranked Kentucky Downs number one in terms of the best betting destinations 2 years in a row. And that why the old Dueling Grounds in 1994 produced a Breeders' Cup Distaff winner in One Dreamer, it was just last year that the newer version, Kentucky Downs, produced Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf winner Arrow Force. Which great stars will come out of Kentucky Downs next? We'll learn all that and more as we watch the racing at Kentucky Downs unfold for the 2016 season. But now, without further ado, let's get into handicapping Kentucky Downs and our how-to series, and we start off with Gary West. Night School welcomes back Gary West. He's been with us over the years in many different lessons in the six seasons of Night School, but tonight to talk about handicapping Kentucky Downs. And who better? Gary's in the paddock for the races at Kentucky Downs. He's the on-air simulcast host and handicapper there. Gary, what do you love about Kentucky Downs?
Well, you have to love the quality of the racing to begin. Kentucky Downs is offering $1.5 million a day in purses, extraordinary, the highest purses in the country. And we have horses coming from California, New York, of course, horses based here in Kentucky, horses from Gulfstream Park. It is just amazing how many quality stables and quality horses are converging on Kentucky Downs. And I've noticed over the last few years, the purses are so high. Maidens run for $130,000, which is a stakes race in many places, as you know. The purses are so high that some of the best horsemen in the country are sitting on their best two-year-olds, if they think they can run on the grass at all, and waiting for Kentucky Downs. So the quality of racing is extraordinary, but beyond that, it's sort of a bettor's paradise because full fields, the largest fields in the country, averaging 10.6 starters a race, and a low takeout. So you have the perfect storm for a horse player. You have quality racing, which means formful racing, good horses, and you have a low takeout and large fields, all of which means you have great payoffs and great betting opportunities. In two of the last 3 years, and this is extraordinary, a straight bet on the favorite would have yielded a profit, simply because the favorite typically is 3.5, 4 to 1.
And Gary, for that perfect storm that you talk about, with the low takeout, with the tremendous purses, help the fan out there, help the better understand why it's possible at Kentucky Downs, but may not be possible, say, at Churchill Downs or another track that runs many more dates. I mean, the five-day racing season at Kentucky Downs is conducive to what they're able to do in terms of the quality, correct?
Oh, absolutely. They simulcast year-round, and they have historic racing machines. And so while they only race 5 days a year, the racetrack is generating purse money throughout the calendar. So that means the purse money builds up and builds up, and then they give it all away in 5 days. And by the way, they also send some additional purse money to Ellis Park, which has been a great boon for the horsemen of Kentucky and has encouraged many Kentucky horsemen to stay here in the state where the purses are now quite attractive. So I think Kentucky Downs has done the Kentucky horsemen a great service, the Kentucky racing industry and the racing industry generally a great service, and they've done horsemen a great service. I mean, the horse players a great service as well by offering this great brief festival of turf racing.
Could it be replicated in other states that had gaming, say, a Pennsylvania, Louisiana, where a track is just basically set up to operate a few days a year at a high-level boutique. Are there hurdles to doing that somewhere else? Does it just happen to work well in Kentucky, or could this be replicated?
Well, I don't know if it could be replicated to the degree of having purses at $1.5 million a day.
Right.
But certainly this model could be replicated. What is an obstacle is, in many places, racetrack management. Racetrack management that focuses on the slot machines, in some cases, or historic racing machines that they have here. But they focus on the gaming part of the industry. So all they want to do is keep their doors open for as much racing as possible. And they emphasize quantity over quality. They think the people who show up to play the races might wander into the casino as well. But those racetracks, if they would reduce their dates, they could pile up this purse money and offer much better racing and much higher purses. And the horsemen would realize that if they would be willing to travel, that they could have these lucrative seasons and at brief meetings. Instead of having, 100 days where you average $150,000 a day, how about have 30 days where you average $500,000 a day? And then you have another meet of 30 days elsewhere where the purses are $500,000 a day. And, the horse population has been, as everyone knows, declining now for a decade. Mm-hmm. And that makes these extensive seasons in some states, such as Louisiana, racetracks by law have to run, these endless meetings so that they can even simulcast or offer other gaming, which is absurd, of course. But instead of offering these endless seasons, they would be much, much better off if they would offer briefer seasons with quality racing.
You talked about track management in some of your comments. The track management at Kentucky Downs, headed by Corey Johnson. I know he's the reason you are there working Kentucky Downs, because Corey Johnson made his hay opening Remington Park in the late 80s, early 90s, opening Lone Star Park and bringing a Breeders' Cup there in the early to mid 90s. You being a Fort Worth, Texas guy, you show up all the way in Franklin, Kentucky to support something that Corey Johnson is doing. Talk about his management style. I know personally Corey is a horse player. He's been a customer of the Horse Player Now Buzz product over the years. So I know when there's a track manager who wants to buy a handicapping product to be better playing a contest or betting on the weekends, that they're serious about the game we love. And talk a bit about Corey Johnson.
Well, you know Corey very well, so I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but maybe some of your listeners don't know that Corey Johnson loves horse racing, and that is what makes Kentucky Downs different. Corey called me, I guess it was 4 or 5 years ago, to ask me to help out here at Kentucky Downs. And since he's a good friend, I said, of course, I'll be there. And then when I got here, I said, oh, my goodness, this is great. You couldn't keep me away. This is just wonderful, because of the quality of the racing. And at that time, the purses were just starting to explode. But Corey emphasizes racing, and he loves racing, and he's a horse player, so he understands the horse player's attitude, the horse player's mentality, which is why there are low takeouts here. And I think that is a great, great problem throughout the industry, that many racetrack managers and racetrack executives don't know anything about horse racing. They emphasize some other part of the business. Or if they know something about horse racing, they don't know anything about playing the horses. They don't understand horse players. They don't understand the horse player's attitude and the horse player's priorities. But Corey gets it. He understands all of that. And that is, I think, one of the things that separates Kentucky Downs from other racetracks. You don't say, and I've been around many, many racetracks throughout the country, and I don't know many racetrack executives, frankly, these days, that love horse racing, know horse racing, and understand horse players. Corey Johnson is one of the few.
And a tip of the cap to his compatriot there in Kentucky, Ron Geary, over at Ellis Park, of a similar mold, a longtime horse player and better who is running a track that has limited number of dates in Kentucky, but they're not necessarily shaping the calendar in Kentucky at Ellis Park and at Kentucky Downs, but they may be shaping the future of how you manage a racetrack and what works and what doesn't work, because they do have the horse player in mind. I think those guys are two great role models for other track executives to follow.
I agree. In fact, I went to Ellis Park Sunday. I have a handicapping seminar there and just love Ellis Park. It is a charming racetrack. And Ron Geary, another guy who loves horse racing, knows horse players, plays the horses, and emphasizes the sport. And that has been a big difference there at Ellis Park, and they've turned that around, and they're moving in the right direction as well. And again, it's all because of that attitude that begins at the top, and that is an emphasis on horse racing and a love of horse racing and an understanding of the horse player's perspective.
You're listening to Night School, How to Handicap Kentucky Downs. We're joined tonight by Gary West, one of our guests, Gary, the paddock handicapper and analyst at Kentucky Downs, and 30 years plus in the Dallas-Fort Worth area as a renowned national turf rider. You've covered all the big events over the years at all the major racetracks, one of the absolute elite turf riders of his current generation. So, Gary West, a pleasure to have you with us in Night School tonight. So we've talked about the management of Kentucky Downs. We talked about why it's an interesting meet, why it's a successful meet, but for the fans at home, it comes down to picking winners, Gary. And for the rest of our segment, I want to talk to you about handicapping Kentucky Downs. It's what you do. You only get 5 shots a year to do it, so you have to pick your spots judiciously, but you also can't kind of, you know, twiddle your toes around in the pool. When you see something, you've got to kind of capitalize on it with only about, 40 to 50 races max that you're going to see for the entire year. So let's talk about it. What are the main focal points people need to look at when they handicap Kentucky Downs?
Well, as a handicapper, I think the racing here is very challenging. Handicapping is very challenging. It is intellectually demanding. And that's great. That's great, because the more difficult it is, the better a good handicapper is going to, or the greater his advantage will be. The first thing to remember is that the oval is not an oval. It's a mile and 5/16, and it's kind of shaped like a pear with a very tight first turn and a very wide sweeping second turn. And also, it's kind of counterintuitive here, because Kentucky Downs has one of the longest stretches, home stretches, in the country. So you would think that late closers would perform great here and just come running down the lane and grab all the money. But that isn't the case, because that long stretch is uphill. It is uphill almost until about the 16th pole, then it levels out. And, you know, sometimes you'll see horses surge that final 16th of a mile. But it is largely uphill. It's an undulating course. And that, I think, has a great influence on the races and on the handicapping. It makes for a demanding situation. The thing to remember is that on the backstretch, starting at about the 6.5 pole, the run to that big sweeping turn is largely downhill, so that horses can run very quickly into that turn. And because this turn is so broad and so wide, they don't have to slow down a great deal in that turn. Sometimes it encourages horses to go too fast. But here's the thing, particularly when the turf is firm. It's kind of like the wind in Oklahoma that you're familiar with. Mm-hmm. And it's like the speedsters have the wind at their back when they leave the gate. Here they're running downhill. So when they do most of their best running, when they do their best work, they have an easier time of it. They have less stress. And then when they turn into the stretch and the late runners do their best work, the late runners do have a disadvantage, and the late runners do have a hard time of it because they have to run uphill. So at races at 6.5 or less, 7/8 really, speed holds surprisingly well, which is why I say it is counterintuitive. Speed is very dangerous. On the other hand, in races longer than that, the run to that crest on the backstretch is uphill. So in those races, the early leaders have to run uphill for maybe the first a quarter of a mile, and that puts them at a disadvantage, and you'll see the late runners do especially well in races at a mile, mile and 70, and of course in the two-turn races, and there aren't many of those, a mile and 5/16 and a mile and a half, the winning move is usually a stalking move. You don't see a lot of front runners win at that distance, but occasionally it happens. But the winning move is usually a move that has a horse making his move in the second turn and arrives at the top of the stretch within a length of the lead. In fact, I was looking at the mile and 5/16, some mile and a half races, and the typical winning running line is like this. Four lengths back after the opening half mile, and then two and a half lengths back after a mile, and then a length back after a mile and a quarter, so that there's little work to do in the stretch. But the racetrack, I think, also might favor outside post positions, particularly in those races that start on the backstretch. Not so much, of course, in the two-turn races, but on the backstretch, because they have more of a straight run to the turn. The backstretch actually angles out slightly so that the inside post positions have to sort of ease their way to the right to make that big sweeping turn, whereas the horses on the outside have a more direct run to the turn. So it's a very challenging course to handicap. And I love it for that reason, and of course for the quality and the payoffs.
Similar, some of the things you talked about with the post position in those sprints to what folks who may play Southern California are familiar with, going down the hill on the turf course at Santa Anita in those 6.5 furlong turf sprints. A lot of times, the outside posts are actually the best place to be because of that run into the first partial
bend. That's
exactly
right. Yeah.
Of what they have there. I thought you made a great point, and I want to come back and kind of underline and hyperscore that, because you made a great point about what horses have to do early in a race really being the indicator of what they're going to have left at the end of the race. So many people think races are won in the home stretch, and yes, it's in front of the grandstand, and that's where we all see them, and that's where the camera's focused in on them closest, and we get the hero shot of the winner in the stretch. But Gary, you know as well as I do, 90% of races are won and lost at the beginning of a race, not the first jump. It's not all about having great speed, but what you do that first quarter of a mile or half mile writes your ticket on what you have left to do at the end. I mean, horses just don't naturally get faster the longer races go. They just decelerate at a different rate than each other. I mean, most of them do their best running. A lot of Zenyatta's fastest fractions were her first quarter and half mile of races, even though she was a deep, deep closer. She just decelerated a lot less slower than a lot of the other horses who were backing up. So what you talked about, having that downhill run at the beginning of a race for a front runner, this is when they're supposed to be working their hardest, when they show they're exhibiting speed, and yet they're getting the easier time of it. That's why that backstretch tailwind, like you were talking about in Oklahoma or Keeneland, will often get a lot of breezy conditions, where you get that backstretch tailwind and the horse opens up their typical advantage. They're running in their comfort zone, but they didn't have to run nearly as hard to go as fast as they did. That often sets them up for a better run in the end. And I thought that was a great point you made, and I didn't know that about the topography, I guess, if you will, of the different courses and distance there at Kentucky Downs. I thought that was a great point and a great takeaway, and it explains, because a lot of times with stats, Gary, we're trying to understand why they happen, right? Why does speed win at this particular distance? Why is this jockey good at these trips or this course? And when you can actually put a little bit of fact behind the percentage, like you're talking about, the downhill run early in those sprint races, that makes a tremendous amount of sense as to why speed ends up holding well.
Yeah, I think the key, as you know, to any horse's success is the distribution of energy. And the trainer and the jockey are trying to figure out how this horse can most effectively distribute his energy over the distance, three-quarters of a mile and a half, whatever it is. And the faster you go early, the slower you're going to go late. It's quite simple. And I think that we too often make assumptions that late closers, for example, will run better when they go longer. That often isn't the case. And we too often make assumptions that speedsters will falter when they go longer. And that is not often the case. You have to look at the horse and how he distributes his energy most effectively. And keep in mind, this isn't so true here at Kentucky Downs, but elsewhere, that a speedster, for example, is much more likely to be successful going a mile and a 16th around two turns than he is going 7/8 of a mile around one turn. The reason being, when you go two turns, you have a 3/16 of a mile run to that turn, that first turn, and it forces the horse to relax. It forces the horse to slow down and rate himself. And so you force the horse to contain his speed, and he's much more likely to carry it for that reason. Whereas at 7/8 of a mile, when they spring the latches, you have a half mile run to the turn, and that just invites these speedsters to run faster than they're capable of going easily or casually. But at Kentucky Downs, you have that run to the turn that's downhill. So that's the easiest of all possible worlds for those speedsters.
Let's talk about where the horses come from at Kentucky Downs. Of course, you've got the Kentucky Circuit at Ellis Park. Some horses laid off from the Churchill meet that closed, at the beginning of July. You've got some horses from New York. And then you've got horses coming in from various parts around the country that you may not necessarily tie to this region, but they're going to come here and run for the money. Do you find horses from any particular area or region outperform or underperform what you might expect? I mean, for example, do I want California horses showing up there at Kentucky Downs? Do I not want horses coming in from a particular track? What do you see in terms of feeder circuits?
Well, over the last few years, the horses from Saratoga, as you would expect, have run very, very well at Kentucky Downs. The reason being they have a large turf course there. It's a larger oval, but most of all, the quality of competition. But I think now, the last 2 years, this year and last year, those Saratoga horses aren't nearly as dominant as they might have been in the past because, in part, more horsemen are targeting the Kentucky Downs season, and the quality of racing has, I think, improved elsewhere, most notably at Ellis Park. There were, I think, four winners opening day that had previously raced at Ellis Park. That's probably as many winners as Ellis Park produced all of the season last year, or 2 years ago, I should say, because the racing has improved so significantly at Ellis Park. Indiana Downs produces some winners here. And Arlington Park is another one that I think has produced a lot of successful performances here at Kentucky Downs. We don't get as many shippers from California, of course, but those that do come here with a purpose. If they make that journey, they come with a purpose, and they usually do okay. But I think the turf course there, unless they're running down the hill, is quite different from the Kentucky Downs turf course. The course here rewards experience, and there's no getting around that. And experience by trainers, by the horses themselves, and by jockeys. I've noticed over the years that jockeys who are riding here for the first time are caught by surprise. And usually take a few races, if not a few days, to figure things out. Also, you don't see many first-time starters winning here. Since I've been coming here, I can only recall four, and they were all last year, by the way, which emphasizes the quality of the competition, four two-year-olds that won their debuts at Kentucky Downs. Now, here's the thing about those four two-year-olds. Three of them went on to run in the Breeders' Cup, and the other one, Family Ties, recently finished third in the Alabama Stakes at Saratoga. So all four of those horses were very special. In fact, they together have won now $1.5 million. So it takes a special horse, and although there were four first-time starters to win last year, it takes a special first-timer to win here. And I think although four won last year, instead of confuting that argument, they only emphasized it because they were indeed very special horses.
You talked about trainers who have had some success at Kentucky Downs and others who may not have. Some of the haves and have-nots are surprising for Kentucky handicappers. When you look at the struggles of Steve Asmussen and Dale Romans at Kentucky Downs, it's remarkable. I mean, Asmussen's last 3 years have been 0 for 12, 1 for 12, and 0 for 10 from 13, 14, and 2015. Dale Romans went 0 for 10 in 2013, 1 for 19 in 2014, and 0 for 16 in 2015. These are guys consistently top five in the standings at Churchill Downs, at Keeneland, the top meets in Kentucky. Any rhyme or reason why guys like Romans or Asmussen may have horses that struggle at Kentucky Downs?
I would be hard-pressed to figure that one out. I would only guess, and this is just a guess, that both those guys, for the most part, the best horses in their barns run on the dirt. Mm-hmm. And that's the only thing I can say about that. They won the occasional race here at Kentucky Downs, but they, as you point out, haven't won a lot of races. And that's my only explanation. On the other hand, Mike Maker's done very well here.
Right.
And Wesley Ward has done very well here. Bill Mott will come here and win races. But you're right, Asmussen and Romans, although they're successful everywhere else, haven't had a lot of success here at Kentucky Downs. And I think part of it is, you know, that there's the allure of all this money, that some of those guys are running horses here because the purses are so high, and the horses may or may not really want to go a mile and a half, or may not want to run on the turf. In other words, it might not be the perfect spot for them, but for this money, they're going to take a shot. Whereas some guys like Mott, for example, or Neil Drysdale has a horse running here Thursday, those guys have pointed this out, have circled it on the calendar, and here they are. I think it's a different approach in some cases because, of course, Asmussen and Romans both have large stables here within Kentucky. And you know, when the bus passes by waving $1 million at you, you got to take a swing at it. Whereas a guy like Mott, who sends a horse here from New York, well, this horse is coming with purpose. So it's a different sort of I think approach when you have to go to a lot of care and trouble and expense to get here to run, or when you just get on a van and ship down from Louisville.
A few more questions with Gary West, paddock handicapper and racing analyst at Kentucky Downs, as our night school How to Handicap Kentucky Downs sequence continues here. Gary, we talked about some of the riders who do well. It's a European-style turf course. Have you mentioned the French Foreign Legion is in effect at Kentucky Downs in the saddle? I mean, Florent Giroux, Julien Leperoux, Flavien Pratt, these guys have all ridden this turf course very, very well over the years. I would take it probably some of their youth coming into experience here.
Yeah, I think so. I've spoken to Florent and Julien about riding here, and both of them agree that their European experience has paid dividends riding this turf course. They like it a great deal. They've been very successful. In fact, Florent Giroux last year, I think he won with 45% or so, 43%, whatever it was, of his mounts. Just incredible. They certainly know their way around this turf course. Again, it pays experience. It pays dividends to experience. The Kentucky guys who have ridden here frequently do very well. Brian Hernandez really knows his way around this track, and mm-hmm. He has done very well here also.
Joe Rocco Jr. is
another one.
You know, he was a third of the time in the exacta at the 2014 or 2015 meet. If you can get one out of three in the exacta in 12 horse fields, you're doing something right. And Joe Rocco Jr., not the kind of guy who's riding A-list horses for A-list barns all the time. You know, you can catch a guy like that at a price. And prices are really what we're trying to find here. You know, I mean, if you can get, like you said, favorites in that $8, $9, $10 range just for the favorites, the exotics build out from there. And when you talk about the exotic wagers at Kentucky Downs, Gary, you know, Win, Place, and Show's a 16% takeout. The exact is only 18.25. And then the deeper exotics are 19%, all, you know, among the lowest in the industry. When you go up to the teller or you go to your account and you punch a ticket, what pools are you playing in mostly when it comes to Kentucky Downs? You're going to have field size working for you, but how do you approach the different pools?
Well, I think people should probably make the wager that they're most comfortable with, and, you know, whatever approach they're comfortable with. And not everyone is willing to embrace a lot of risk. For me, I don't mind taking on the risk if I can have the opportunity to have a major success, you know, cash for a big one. So I usually swing for the fences and play multi-race wagers and multi-horse wagers. The multi-horse wagers, meaning trifectas and superfectas, tend to be more lucrative simply because the probability of having a long shot run second or third, which would make that a big payoff, the probability is greater than having a long shot win, which is what you would need for a multi-race wager to pay boxcars. On the other hand, here especially because the odds are so good and the race is so competitive, the multi-race wagers, I think, are more rewarding than they are at most racetracks.
Gary West, we thank you for joining us in Night School and sharing your thoughts on how to handicap Kentucky Downs. Very informative, and we appreciate your time.
My pleasure, Jeremy. Anytime. Thank you.
Take care, my friend.
Okay, you too.
Night School is brought to you by the American Quarter Horse Association, home of the fastest athletes. For more, visit AQHA.com. And by Keeneland Select, the official online wagering home of the historic Keeneland Racecourse. Sign up and get a $150 bonus and enjoy no-fee online wagering.
I've never experienced anything like it. I thought to myself, this could be today. Why not today? And it was. The horse went from last to first and won by a nose. Winning the NAC changed my life. It never would have happened without TwinSpires.com. I won a TwinSpires qualifying tournament and went on to take the $1 million prize. Play at TwinSpires.com and you could be the next one to hit it big.
Looking for some excitement? Get away to Mountaineer Casino Racetrack and Resort. The gaming action sizzles from slots to video poker to hot table game action. There's more winning excitement at Mountaineer. Stay in our newly renovated hotel rooms. Enjoy new menus in 6 restaurants. Heat up your nights with live entertainment. Play a round of golf. Enjoy the thrills of live thoroughbred racing or relax in our spa. Get in on it all at Mountaineer. Mountaineer Casino Racetrack and Resort. West Virginia Lottery, West Virginia Lottery Table Games.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BridgeNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BridgeNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BridgeNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BridgeNet.com/APR. The BridgeNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BridgeNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BridgeNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Night School is proudly presented each week by Woodbine Entertainment, home of Woodbine Racetrack and Mohawk Racetrack, and by the Mountaineer Casino Racetrack and Resort, conducting live racing 5 nights per week through November. First post, 7 p.m. Eastern.
And And welcome back to Night School, our live premiere on the 26th week of the Night School program in Season 6. It's September 6th, and we are just after Labor Day and into the racing season at Kentucky Downs. Four more racing days remain for the 2016 season at Kentucky Downs. Earlier today, we caught up with Dick Downey of the DowneyProfile.com and got his thoughts on how to handicap Kentucky Downs. Welcome back to Night School as we welcome in Dick Downey of the DowneyProfile.com, one of those websites that if you're into horse racing, you'll really like. Dick likes to get in and decipher the information, look at the stats and trends. Opinions are great, Dick, but I think you like to have your plays rooted a little more in fact.
Well, I try to, and I think facts are kind of underrated in today's culture, and I really believe strongly in facts. I think facts should speak for themselves very often.
And too many times, it's just opinions thrown around. So if we can put some facts behind the opinions and try to create them in a more sound fashion, maybe we can land on some winners. Kentucky Downs, the subject here, how to handicap KD, and it's a track that you take seriously. You keep a lot of stats and trends on. What lures you to playing Kentucky Downs?
Well, you know, Kentucky Downs is just south of Franklin, Kentucky, which is in Simpson County, one of the smallest counties in Kentucky. And there are 120 counties in Kentucky. And I grew up in Simpson County. And so I have a strong bond to Kentucky Downs just because it's located in the county where I grew up. And now that is one thing. The other thing is the racing there is tremendous, and I've always enjoyed it. I've hardly missed any of the races since the track opened back in the early 90s.
Formerly Dueling Grounds and renamed Kentucky Downs a few years ago, and the field sizes at Kentucky Downs are one of the most appealing parts of the wagering process. Over the last 4 years, the field size have gone from 9.5 to 9.9 to 10.2 to 10.6 horses per race. That's as larger than anywhere in the country, and that means your handicapping process on each day's card is going to take a little bit longer than usual.
Yes, it does. I think Kentucky Downs was the only track in the country that averaged that 10 mark per race last year. And it's entertaining, but it sure is a lot of work when you're trying to really get into depth in handicapping the races. It's work that I like doing, but it just takes time.
Compare it to a normal card, say, somewhere else in Kentucky or another of the simulcast circuits that you play around the country in New York. I mean, what's your average time handicapping a card other places around the country, and how much time does it take you to go through a Kentucky Downs card?
Well, as you know, my handicapping at Kentucky Downs is for public consumption. My selections go on the website, the Downey Profile, and this year it's my understanding my selections will be on the simulcast, the national simulcast on the graphics. So I feel like I have a responsibility to other people to go in depth when my picks are put out for public consumption. And so it takes longer because I'm just more careful. I guess I feel like I owe people that obligation, and I'm try to be more careful with other people's money than my own, perhaps. When I go to the track at Saratoga, for example, I don't work that beat. I'm there just for fun and to have a good time. I don't bet that much money, and there's so much to do, I won't sit down and spend 4 or 5 hours handicapping that card. But I do at Kentucky Downs.
Now, favorites have kind of been all over the place at Kentucky Downs over the last several years. We've seen some meets where they've pushed the mid-40s in the winning percentile, and some that have been in the high 20s. The unpredictability of the racing there, anything you can put your thumb on as to why the winning favorites have been so volatile?
Well, I think after the track is, of course, and I'm sure all of our listeners know, or if not all of them, almost all know that the track is unique in North America. It's the only track in North America that's got undulating, it's up and down hills. The one it's kind of a kidney-shaped track, and it's more like a European course. So horses aren't used to that. Trainers weren't used to it when it opened, and neither were the jockeys. And it took a long time for everybody to become, I don't know, versed in how to win there. And as time went by, I believe that trainers and jockeys became better at gauging what horses would run well there and particularly the jockeys how to ride there. So I think that's one reason that the number of favorites who won races there increased. Another reason could be that bettors became better at handicapping the track. You know, mm-hmm. The track is different than anything else for the bettors too. And as time passed, I think maybe the bettors have improved their ability to pick winners there.
Similar to what we saw in the Polytrack era, you know, what we saw at Keeneland for the first couple of years in the Polytrack era, it was very difficult for people to – it was bombs away every race. It seemed like winning favorites percentage was low. And then as time went on, the public kind of caught on a bit. And by the end of the Polytrack era, the winning percentage of favorites was similar to what we see at a lot of tracks with the conventional dirt around the country. So just that familiarity of the racing at Kentucky Downs is probably catching on somehow.
I think so. Yes, sir.
The takeout structure is fantastic. So if you want to get to the windows and you want to place a bet at Kentucky Downs, some of the lowest takeouts in America, a very player-friendly track, the review, you're looking at 19% on most of the exotic wagers, 18.25% on Exacta, so one of the lower Exacta takeouts in the country, 16% on win, place, and show. And then the multi-race wagers, 19% on the pick four, which was a solid takeout, but 14% on the pick five, so a very low pick five takeout. It's going to tempt people to try to string together multi-race wagers, that low takeout and these huge field sizes. But putting five winners together in fields of 12 and 14, it will be a tall task for players playing Kentucky Downs, but a big reward, I'm sure.
Well, you know, Corey Johnson, the president of the track and part owner, he's pretty dedicated to making this the horse players track, and it's rated number one by the Horse Players Association of North America 2 years in a row now, just as being player-friendly. And the low takeouts that you described are part of that equation, along with the big fields.
And you talk about those pick fours and pick fives. According to BristNet, the average pick four, the $2 payoff, was $41,000 last meet. So in the 50-cent, yeah, in the 50-cent parameters, you're talking about a $10,000 pick four. There must have been some big boppers in there to jack that price up to that point. But
last year, you know, on the final day of the meet last year, we had a 50-1 winner followed by a 60-1 winner.
So that probably, that probably jacked it up quite a bit. The average pick five is $17,000 for the $2 payoff. So again, in the 50-cent parlance, you're looking at about $4,500 on the average pick five. So there is a chance to make some serious scores at Kentucky Downs. Dick, tell us some of your angles and trends you like to follow there and some of the tools you use in your handicapping.
Well, one thing I posted on the website is something I've worked on for 2 or 3 years. It all relates to the condition of the ground there. And my theory, and I believe this is based on fact, is that the firmer the turf, the greater chance that horses from inside posts running on or near the lead have to win. The looser the ground or the wetter the ground, I think, favors horses running more on the outside away from where that water drains toward the rail. And coming from behind, because the horses in front seem to get a little bit tired sometimes under those conditions. And that's a basic premise I try to follow when I handicap these races. Now, I know this is not exactly a completely time-sensitive broadcast, but I'll say that 3 days before opening day, I walked part of the track, and I just kept poking my finger in the ground, and there was a little give to it. It will be rated firm, but there is a little give to it. And on a day like that, I think it's absolutely fair, and there's really no bias either way. So So those are some of the premises I use in handicapping.
And for those trying to follow the weather in the area, Franklin, Kentucky is the home area of Kentucky Downs. So if you want to go to Weather Channel and put in a bookmark of what to follow, Franklin, Kentucky, where you want to follow. In terms of the jockeys and the trainers that compete at this meet, it's a lot of the regulars that we're used to seeing on the Kentucky circuit, but a different leaderboard in some respects. Guys like Corey Lannery, who are dominant at Churchill Downs, a top rider at Keeneland. He has struggled over this course. Corey Lannery in the last 3 years went 1-for-34, 2-for-23, and 1-for-25. And this is a guy who's perennially a top three rider at Churchill and a top 5-to-10 rider at Keeneland year in and year out. But he's putting up 1-fors and 2-fors an entire meet. And, you know, Lannery hasn't broken through in the riding colony to have much success there. Robbie Alvarado, something I saw, was 5-for-69 over the last 2 years at Kentucky Downs. Alvarado, Lannery, two guys who ride extremely well throughout Kentucky, but have had their struggles here at Kentucky Downs. Do you put a lot of weight into jockeys' past performance?
Well, I do. I do. But now, Lannery, like Brian Hernandez Jr., they both have had success at the meet. They were the number one and two jockeys in 2012. But for whatever reason, luck hasn't fallen their way since then.
Mm-hmm.
But they both have shown that they know the track, and I don't think they should be overlooked. And I'm speaking particularly of Corey Lannery and Brian Hernandez Jr. Hernandez won 7 races and Lannery 6 in the 2012 meet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they may pop up and do some – I know they're both riding this meet, so – I wouldn't say they should be overlooked, but Florent Giroux has come in here, and I think he was 4-of-15 2 years ago, and then mm-hmm. last year he was 12-of-28. He's really been going great guns, and I noticed he's got a mount in every race for the opening day of the 2016 meet. And, you know, you got to pay attention to everything he's riding. He's just doing so well. And I hear Flavian Prott's coming in from California, a good turf rider, for the first time for the 2016 meet. It'd be interesting to watch how he performs, too.
Yeah, because Drayden Van Dyke came in last year with some California mounts and won 4 or 5 races and had some success. So that might bode well for Pratt, who has ridden some at Keeneland in the past year. So he's gotten a little bit of his feet wet with some of the barns and the connections on the Kentucky circuit. And, of course, any shippers that come in from the West Coast, you know, he would probably have maybe first dibs at some of those. Let's talk trainers for just a bit. Wayne Catalano in 2013 was a house of fire. He won 10 of 15 races. Now, last year, he only went 1-for-9, and people expecting, you know, the tale of two seasons, if you will. You know, you can go from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows. Wesley Ward has been very good at Kentucky Downs historically, but last year couldn't buy one, went 0-for-22. We see some wild swings with the trainers. I guess we should just kind of see who starts off hot.
Well, you know, when Wayne Catalano won all those races, Channing Hill was his go-to rider pretty much, and he won 6th that meet.
Mm-hmm.
Hill is here. Hill's going to be riding at this meet, but I haven't really seen any Wayne Catalano entries as I've gone through the card so far. You know, it's horse racing, and sometimes we all run into streaks from time to time where things go well, regardless of our walk in life, I guess, and probably no different for horse trainers. Mark Cassie, Mike Maker, Bill Mott, they all do pretty well there typically, and mm-hmm. They're all going to be there again this year.
On the flip side, Dale Roman, Steve Asmussen, two guys who are, you know, among the leading trainers on dirt in the Kentucky circuit, have struggled. I mean, between them, they have 2 wins in the last 6 meets. Between Romans and Asmussen, they are 2-4. Oh, somewhere in the neighborhood of 70-80, totaling up the number of starts for the two guys. So, you know, Romans and Asmussen are two guys that are probably going to take attention at the windows from simulcast bettors around the country, but haven't had a lot of success there over the course at Kentucky Downs. Dick, when it comes to general turf handicapping, what are some of the things you like to see? Is it as much pace-dependent as racing on the dirt? What are your general feelings about handicapping on the grass?
I don't think it's quite as pace dependent as dirt racing. I do like to see a turf horse that, you know, finishes well. And like I said, if the course at Kentucky Downs is pretty firm, you got to pay extra attention to those horses with good early speed. And I think you have to do that as a general rule, too.
Mm-hmm.
The Kentucky Downs, it really seems to pan out. But I like to see a turf horse that finishes well, above all, I guess.
And pedigree-wise, are there any pedigrees that kind of have shown themselves to be successful over the years here at Kentucky Downs? I, you know, assume the Kitten's Joys that, you know, run well on the grass anywhere in Kentucky are obviously prevalent and popular in the entry box. Any pedigrees that seem to do well there?
Well, you're right. The Kitten's Joys do. Dynaformer, if you can find Dynaformer in that pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
That's something to pay attention to. That's something that Billy Pettengill, who times the races, and he's the paddock judge. Billy does everything. He's the man. That guy does everything around tracks in Kentucky and Louisiana. Billy has noticed the Dynaformer trend there and commented on it.
And Billy's been a past night school guest when we talked about clockers and morning workouts. He's been on before with this, and great personality. You talk with Billy Pettengill, you're going to two things. You're going to be entertained, and you're going to learn something when you hang out with him, no doubt about it.
I love Billy.
You know, a horse for course angle would seem to be something that you want to try to find at Kentucky Downs because it is so unique. So horses who have had success
Absolutely.
It's hard to find, though, because they only run 5 days a year on the calendar. So you're not going to have a ton of horses who have a lot of experience at Kentucky Downs. But just a positive effort over this track should probably be given a little extra weight.
Absolutely. And what happens very often on the horses for courses, you'll see the horse won or hit the board at Kentucky Downs up in the summary portion of the PPs, but the race won't be in the chart. That race won't be in the 10 or 12 races that are listed below it.
Mm-hmm.
I go on Equibase and find those races and see, you know, what if the horse won there, well, what kind of race was it? Did he break his maiden? Was it a claiming race?
Right.
What was it, you know? And if I can find a horse that broke his maiden there at a maiden special weight that's like a 15-1 morning line on Saturday's card, which I have found, there is one named Obsidian Splendor. You know, I'm going to pay special attention to that horse because some horses just like that track better than others. You know, it's just a fact of life because it's so different, and some horses enjoy it more than others.
As Dick mentioned, at Equibase, you can search a horse by name. If you go to the very top right of the page and type in the horse name and hit search, then you'll get the career record on that horse, and you can go down and look through their career past performances, find the race that they ran at Kentucky Downs, and like he said, try to match it up on class.
Yeah, you can punch the chart. There's a little icon for the chart. You can pull the chart up and see exactly what kind of race it is, exactly what he did.
It's one of those good free services I like to use a lot. It's good for pedigrees and past performances that are, like you said, don't show up in the last 10 or 12 races that show up in your past performance provider. Dick, some final thoughts here as we wrap up our segment on handicapping Kentucky Downs. What is the number one thing, if somebody is going to crack open their PPs and handicap at Kentucky Downs, what's the number one thing you want them to know before they start handicapping?
Oh, my gosh.
You're on the spot.
Well, about 40% of winners were favorites 2 years ago. That's the one thing I want them to know. Maybe the second thing is last year was, I think, 29%.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the thing to do is to work with it for a little while and see if any trends develop, although it is a short meet. But sometimes you can get a feel for whether the betting public is on the right horse and is trending that way. So I'd be looking at that.
Dick Downey of thedowneyprofile.com, thanks for joining us tonight at Night School. Best of luck playing Kentucky Downs and beyond.
Jeremy, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Dick Downey, we'll have more Night School coming up right after this.
Night School is brought to you by TwinSpires.com, the official online wagering home of the Kentucky Derby and the popular Twin Spires Players Pools. and by Briznet, the official past performance provider to Night School. Check out the exceptional and exclusive PPs endorsed by Night School at Briznet.com.
Strategize, analyze, select. Join Keeneland Select to bet on racing from around the world on your computer, tablet, or smartphone, anytime, anywhere. Featuring the best rewards in racing, free pass performances, live video, race replays, and more. Plus, Keeneland Select invests a portion of its profits back into the sport. Join Keeneland Select today and earn a $150 sign-up bonus at KeenelandSelect.com. Dedicated to the sport and dedicated to the players.
Next on FAQ 60, the morning line. The morning line odds are not a prediction of each horse's probability of winning a race. Rather, they're a prediction of how the public will bet the race. Once betting begins, the morning line odds are replaced with the actual odds. There are two ways you can use morning line odds to your advantage. First, the morning line helps a horse player determine overlay or underlay values. If a horse's current odds are over the projected morning line odds, that's an overlay, and it can be a great value bet. Second, morning line odds are significant to players making multi-race bets like the Daily Double and Pick Four. Those early morning line projections often attract the most money in the multi-race pools, which decreases your potential payoff. This FAQ 60 is presented by AQHA Racing and Horse Player Now. For more, go to AQHARacing.com.
Night School is brought to you by the American Quarter Horse Association. Follow the AQHA Horse Player Now official top 10 poll each week at AQHARacing.com. And by Keeneland Select. Earn $50 directly into your account with each $5,000 wagered. And take advantage of one of the industry's most generous players reward programs.
Welcome back to Night School. You are listening to How to Handicap Kentucky Downs, part of our how-to series of racetracks around North America. Plenty more to come on tonight's program, including track announcer John Lees coming up next, as well as classic Night School clips on how to handicap turf racing from the one and only Bob Neumeyer, and what makes a good turf horse from Breeders' Cup grass-winning trainer Brett Calhoun. Now, more of the show. Joining us now in Night School, a treat, John Lees, the voice of the racing at Kentucky Downs. John, welcome to Night School.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
We are talking Kentucky Downs racing, and over the last several years, you've seen about as much of it as anybody, being the race caller there, high above the racetrack. Give us a sense of the challenges of calling the races at Kentucky Downs. It's not your usual vantage points that you're used to on an oval.
Well, you're exactly right. It is a very unique challenge in the United States. We refer to it often as the European-style turf course, which is quite true. I have visited Europe and some racetracks out there, but not extensively. But even if you haven't, you would get the idea as soon as you visit. It's basically a mile and a half in distance, but it's not the typical oval, as you said. It's a wandering and undulating course. When they come by us the first time, they go to the first of two turns, which is more like a hairpin turn, to be honest. It's really sharp. And then they go, when they head for up what would kind of be the backstretch, they sort of wander off towards the right. And at first it seems odd when you see horses. You think that everybody is just drifting off the rail and everybody's going out towards the outside rail. The reason they're doing that is because the jockeys know that that's the straightest course to the top of the rise, which is what they're doing at the backstretch. And then when they get to that top, or the crest of the rise, as Lou Kreipos used to call it, they then are going to dip down as they go for the other part. And the second is a long sweeping turn when they've got five, four, and still even three furlongs to go out there. And then they come to the top of the stretch. It's still a long, long run in from that point. And there are some dips and dives coming through the stretch. And some of the best jockeys have learned how to time their ride just right, which is crucial. I can't stress that enough when it comes to that, with the jockeys being cognizant of when to really make their moves and not get involved too soon. And so then by the time you make it to the wire, that's been a mile and a half journey, but nothing like anything in the United States. And we often, Gary West, and I often say that the one closest thing I can think of is the Hillside Turf Course at Santa Anita, where they actually make a right-hand turn at the beginning and then dip and wander down across the dirt, and here they come. So it's the only thing that comes close. And we also sometimes talk about Woodbine horses because of the length of the stretch being the other common thread. Extremely long stretch at Kentucky Downs. So very unique course. And, yes, it's a unique challenge to call for those reasons as well.
You've got one of the more diverse resumes in the game. You summer at Del Mar. You hit Will Rogers Downs early in the year for their thoroughbred meet, and Kentucky Downs in the fall. Is Kentucky Downs like anything else, or is it really onto its own?
It really is one of a kind, and I appreciate that. You know, I feel very fortunate. I do have to say, excuse me, that every day I realize how fortunate I am to do what I do and the variety of jobs and work and the sport that I have such a passion for and have some from a very young age, and was instilled, of course, in my dad, in me as a trainer in Southern California, and passed on the baton. And I've had a lot of opportunities that, again, I'm very fortunate for. And you mentioned Will Rogers and the others as well. But Kentucky Downs, one of a kind. Always look forward to getting back there each fall. And the racing is just, again, with the injection of those purses, just fueled by that instant racing, unbelievable. With the money that they're going for, you've got these maiden special weights for $130,000. And so as it stands right now, they are the five most important days that I get a chance to call as the announcer in terms of the caliber of racing and the money that's going to be handled on them for sure. And so I certainly take it seriously from that point, and I always anticipate it greatly with a lot of excitement as a chance to, you know, get in there and commentate those races. And I use the word commentate because I think that, for one, that's what's most appropriate on that course. Much like in Europe, the style of those announcers are more like commentators, and with all of the different things that are happening at the different points on that course, it's so involved that I do think that's the best approach. For two, it just happens to fit my style. I think I have got that observation from others, and I think would even put myself in that category as being one of the announcers in the U.S. that is probably more on the colorful side, editorial, more conversational, and will commentate the races in that way and describe the action a little bit more in that style. And so I think that that's suitable for the action that goes on that course.
And given the course, the field sizes, which, you know, average almost 10.5, 10.6 per race last year, opening weekend was, you know, solid 12s.
I love to hear that.
Yeah, almost 12s in every race. You're talking about it from a commentator standpoint. What about a trip handicapper standpoint? Is there a lot of stories to tell within the race because of all those things we mentioned?
Definitely. The shame about it, no, shame is the right word, but the cruel reality is that you won't get a chance usually to bet any horses back on this course because of the 5 days. Very rarely will a horse get a chance to come back and run again. But to take any of their trips to go down the road, you know, to other tracks, I always think that's tough to say, because when they go to a different course, you know, the circumstances are going to change so much for their next race. But in terms of the trips, yes, I can say that anticipating some of the trips sometimes can have a lot to do with post positions at certain distances and avoiding them if you can. For example, in the 6 and 6.5 furlong races, where they start almost as they approach the dip right away and go down and come in for that sweeping turn, it really seems like the outside post positions have the distinct advantage because of that. If you're down on the inside, a lot of them show just enough speed to be in the position where they have to take up when everybody else drops over into that turn. So being down inside usually is a disadvantage at those distances, but then it's the complete opposite in the long races where they go around the two turns, like I described in the beginning, because when they arrive at the first turn, it's such a sharp hairpin turn. The inside post positions or the horses that are able to cross over and get position, they have the advantage. I've seen horses, when they go into that turn, certain ones are going to make up 5 lengths and about 7 or 8 jumps just because they took the turn well and dropped over to the inside. And other horses are going to lose 5 lengths in that amount of time if they're parked about 3, 4, or 5 wide when they get to that first turn. So that's the first thing to look for, I think, is the, where the horses drew at certain distances with that in mind. And then at the mile, for you've got the mile, and I'm not sure if they do the mile 70, I'd have to think back, but roughly, let's just say a mile, that's when they're going up the incline of the backside towards the crest of the rise. I also think you want to draw towards the outside in that case, because they're going over towards the right as they go. So the outside horses are going straight up to it, and the horses that draw, say, 1, 2, and 3 are sort of following over as everybody starts to wander off towards the right. So post position, I think I cannot stress that enough. It's very crucial when you're looking at these races. You got to look at the pace and how you think it's going to shape up and what trip your horse is going to get based on where they drew at that distance. It's very, very important, I think, when you're doing your handicapping.
And then you turn it over into the hands of the jockeys. And at Kentucky Downs, we've seen, you know, Julien Leperoux historically strong. Florent Giroux in 2015 was dominant. Give us a sense of three or four jocks that you feel better when they're on your horse, and maybe not necessarily the more name riders, but guys who are gals who instill confidence in your wagering when they're named on your horses.
It's a little tough to say because each year we get a different variety of jockeys that come in from different places based on their schedules and based on the mounts that they might have and stakes races available to them. So every year it's kind of a different cocktail, if you will, of this mix of jockeys that comes from everywhere else. And they don't have a lot of time to establish form. All that said, Corey Lannery is a jockey that knows that course very well and rides it well if he has the right horse. Brian Hernandez Jr. David Flores is a very experienced jockey, and that's not just the Southern California in me. I've known him a long time. He's a friend of mine, and he's not based out here anymore, but he won a race for Wesley Ward on Saturday, so he knows how to ride this course. By the way, not to give anything away, but look for something that we call a phantom cross. He did it on the horse that won, even though I didn't say it. When he's in front and he knows he's got it, he'll give kind of like a cross, like a left hand, like he's tossing it. It's just calls it the phantom cross because he knows he's got it, in other words, is what it is. So he's not even really doing anything. He's just putting a motion out there because this horse is in front and he knows he's got it. So watch for the David Flores phantom cross. That's when you know you've got it. And in terms of the mix of the other riders coming in, I also mentioned that because look for some jockeys from Southern California to come and ride because their schedules allow it. The racing now shifts to Los Alamitos, where they don't have a turf course, as you know. So Flavian Pratt, for example, he's going to be scheduled to ride a lot of – I don't know if it's going to be all 4 days, but definitely the 8th and definitely some other stakes engagements. You probably know that just yesterday he finished in a tie with Rafael Bejarano for the Jockey Championship at Del Mar. He's made a lot of fans, including myself. Started out here with Richard Mandela and has developed into just one of the top riders on the circuit, especially on the grass, though. That's what counts the most. It's the turf races. And the fact that he's such a good judge of pace, he seems conscious of saving ground, and he somehow just knows how to move at just the right time. All the obvious ingredients of how to win a turf race. So watch for Flavian Pratt when he comes out. I think you might see Drayden Van Dyke back out as well. He won a race on Saturday, also ran third on She's Not Here. So a couple of guys like that. I'm not sure if any of the other stars from Southern California, the big names, are going to come out or not. But pretty much look for jockeys that, like I said, you think are going to kind of fit that in terms of their riding style and how that's going to translate onto this course. But those are a few names, I think, to look for.
John Lee is joining us in Night School tonight as we discuss how to handicap Kentucky Downs. And John, we're going to keep you on for one more question here. And want to ask you,
sure,
give us some handicapping tips. I mean, what are the angles, things in your toolbox that you want for playing Kentucky Downs? Is it speed figure centric? Is it a trip handicapper's place to play? What are the major tools you use when you break down a race there?
Well, the first thing, I'm a big advocate, as some people know, of watching race replays. That to me is the first thing. It's no disrespect to any of the job that the chart callers do or anything that we see in the racing form. That those are all good tools. And also, a lot of people are, the buyer speed figures are there for everybody to see. Equibase has their own speed figures. I don't look a lot at sheets, but I know that they are valuable tools, and a lot of people swear by those. I don't argue with that. I just don't happen to use them a lot for myself. Mm-hmm. The first thing that I do is watch race replays. I just think it's so crucial. And that's probably the announcer in me coming out more than anything else. It's not so much how it came out on paper, it's the way that they did it. Quite often you'll hear me talk about that on Del Mar Simulcast when I'm giving the picks. I'll get to a horse and I'll say, look, I went back and watched the race. If you didn't do that, if you're just looking at the form, you're not going to appreciate how well this horse ran, and here's why, and this is what happened. And so that to me is a crucial thing, because also today when you're playing the races, what are you looking for? You're looking for some value, something that maybe you see that's not obvious to everybody. You want a price. You don't want 6-5, of course. Well, that's one way maybe that you can do that. It's something that's going to not be obvious to everybody that you can pick up off of watching race replays. So that's the first thing that I advocate to people. I also really think that it seems obvious, but you need to really focus on the horse's lifetime turf record. The turf course at Kentucky Downs is a true turf course. It's deep. It's that lush green that, again, also emulates a lot of the style in Europe. And we have a lot of turf courses around the nation that have got that short kind of fairway greens where they, you know, they're going to go fast all the time. They clip it real, real short. Well, you know what? Not all turf courses are alike. So you need to bring over a horse onto this course that really can stand up in that wedge grass and get over it. Well, it's a great course. The jockeys were raving about it on Saturday. It's a safe course. It's in great condition, and everybody is getting over it fantastic. Everyone came back great on Saturday. But it's you need a real turf horse to be able to do well on that course, and I don't think that that's always true at a lot of the turf courses around the country. That includes Southern California, by the way. So, and it did not used to be that way back in the 80s. They used to have the lush wedge turf horses. They got rid of those at some point. So you need a horse that you really believe is coming from a course. Boy, if I had to name a few, people that are based in the East would probably have a stronger opinion about that than me. But if you know you have a horse that's coming from one of those deep, lush turf courses, look for those connections. If you're looking for that in the past performances, they need to have that turf foot, you know, that the trainers talk about, that wedge, that kind of saucer foot where they come over and just can get over the grass so well. It's and the high knee action, too. Talk about race replays. Gary West talks about that. That high, kind of high action, maybe high knee action sometimes that people talk about that typically they say is good if you want to, you know, put a horse on the grass.
I always tell people, if you want to know what high knee action looks like and you're looking for a great example, go back and watch Barbaro's replays. He had one of the great piston-like actions of any horse I've ever seen, and he was great on the dirt, but he started off as a really good turf horse, too, before he switched over to the main track and had all of his success. So if you're looking for race replays, and also that saucer foot that John mentioned, we had a very good lesson with Gary Stevens in night school over the years, but Caton Bradar's handicapping video on visual handicapping, you can go to our YouTube page, youtube.com/horseplayernow, or go to the videos page on our night school page, and you'll see that visual handicapping video, and Caton takes you through and shows you horses in the paddock that have that turf foot and what to look for in that. So a little visual clue to go along with what John's telling you tonight. John, thanks so much for your time tonight. We certainly appreciate it in night school. Best of luck the rest of the way at Kentucky Downs and all your ports of call.
Oh, I appreciate you reaching out very much. I appreciate it. Good luck.
John Lees, everyone, from Kentucky Downs. Plenty more on Night School when we return.
Night School is proudly presented each week by Woodbine Entertainment, home of Woodbine Racetrack and Mohawk Racetrack, and by the Mountaineer Casino Racetrack and Resort, conducting live racing 5 nights per week through November. First post, 7 p.m. Eastern.
National Handicapping Championship Tour today and plan your trip to Las Vegas. Visit nhctour.com for details.
It's our eyes and your prize. It's time to get buzzed. The Horse Player Now Buzz Report brings our expert horses to watch directly to your email inbox. It's an expert service provided by top handicappers like Caden Bradar, Jeff Nahill, Terry Terrell, DC Dino Herrera, Brian W. Spencer, Jerry Schottenkirk, Brian Natto, and me, Jeremy Plunk. Put our team to work for you every single day with weekend, monthly, and quarterly subscription plans that reduce the price to as low as about a dollar a day. We say it's our rise and your prize, and we promise nothing but the best. Best of all, 10% of every purchase goes to benefit the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation to help retired racehorses.
Strategize, analyze, select. Join Keeneland Select to bet on racing from around the world on your computer, tablet, or smartphone, anytime, anywhere. Featuring the best rewards in racing, free pass performances, live video, race replays, and more. Plus, Keeneland Select invests a portion of its profits back into the sport. Join Keeneland Select today and earn a $150 sign-up bonus at KeenelandSelect.com. Dedicated to the sport and dedicated to the players.
The Big Hoss takes the Kentucky Turf Cup by two convincing lengths. It was a good run by PowerPed second, and Roman Approval set the pace.
Dive into handicapping Kentucky Downs, and quickly you'll see why HANA, the Horse Player Association of North America, has deemed Kentucky Downs the top-rated track to bet 2 years in a row. One of the industry's lowest takeout structures awaits horse players, including a 14% takeout in the daily Pick 5 wager. Big scores abound at Kentucky Downs, which averaged 10.6 starters per race last year. Great wagering, great fields, 5 days of international-style turf racing coming this September from Kentucky Downs. Need some help with your handicapping? Don't worry, go to KentuckyDowns.com, where all of their public handicapper selections are free on the website every racing day. Kentucky Downs, get into the action this season and make yourself a score.
Night School is brought to you by the American Quarter Horse Association, home of the fastest athletes. For more, visit AQHA.com. And by Keeneland Select, the official online wagering home of the historic Keeneland Racecourse. Sign up and get a $150 bonus and enjoy no-fee online wagering.
Final segment time on this Night School, the 26th week of the 6th season of the National Online Fan Education Program, as we continue our How to Handicap series, tonight taking a look at how to handicap Kentucky Downs. Already you've heard from track racing analyst Gary West, track announcer John Lees, and handicapper Dick Downey of the DowneyProfile.com. Now let's take a look back in the Night School archives to give you a rounded look at turf handicapping, essential to success in the all-grass racing meet at Kentucky Downs. First up, Bob Neumeyer of NBC Sports. With a Night School archive moment with the great Bob Neumeyer, longtime friend of Horse Player Now, the Night School program, and NBC Sports. Bob tells you what to look for when handicapping on the turf.
Bob, handicapping for the grass, different than for the dirt. What are the things you're looking for in your turf handicap?
Well, I love turf handicapping for a couple of reasons. Number one, typically the fields are big. Number two, I think you can throw out normally three or four horses that have shown that they can't handle it, but the trainers seem to enter them anyway, and I think it's easy to knock out four or five or six right off the hop. Then you have the other important element to me is that I think they run more consistently on the turf. Horses, for a reason, I'm not sure. That there's more of a randomness to dirt racing, if you will, or even synthetic racing. So the variables, to me, are cut down on the grass. Now, mind you, on bogginess or real soft turf, but on a daily basis where the turf is fairly uniform, I think the form holds up pretty well there. And so I have more confidence, to be honest with you, betting something that I really like on turf more than I do on dirt. Now, somebody might say quickly that, you know, trips become important in the turf, and I acknowledge that as being one of the negatives of trip handicapping. But I don't go into it looking, you know, in a negative way. I don't look at it saying, well, I'm not going to make this bet because my horse might get blocked or steadied or we might get caught in on the rail. I don't look at it that way. If it does, it does. It's racing. But I think because of, you know, certain, you know, another angle that I really has been good to me over the years has been analyzing, particularly first timers on the grass, is what the mares have done. And over the years, if a mare either in the first dam or the second dam has thrown two winners, I think that's a positive. I don't care what the dirt form is, I'll play those horses. And they typically go off at boxcar prices, 30 to 1, 40 to 1, 50 to 1. And it is amazing how many times those horses hit. And so if I see a maiden race, two-year-olds, three-year-olds, where there's a lot of first-time turfers, and I look up the pedigree, particularly on the dam side, and I see turf winners out of that mare, I'll play them blindly. And they win more often than you think.
And finally tonight, a look from the trainer's perspective of what makes a great turf horse. Brett Calhoun, Breeders' Cup winning trainer, with Kate and Bradar. When it comes to identifying which kind of horses will handle the grass like we have at Kentucky Downs, we turn to another Night School classic clip when Kate and Bradar caught up with top turf trainer Brett Calhoun.
Brett Calhoun's one of the bright training stars in the ranks these days. Very good at many things, but Brett, in particular, you've had some great success in turf sprints. What's your secret there?
You know, I've just been lucky to have a few nice grass sprinters. Several years ago, I had Mr. Nightlinger that was a very good grass sprinter. I think he was versatile. He was a horse that could do either thing. You know, things that make horses, grass horses or dirt horses, I think, you know, sometimes maybe his feet bothered him a little bit, and I think he tended to move forward on the grass because it was a little more comfortable for him. Then you move forward to Mr. Knight, to Chamberlain Bridge, a similar situation with him. His pedigree really stuck out for the grass, I mean, top and bottom, and I think that has a lot to do with it. I think sometimes the kickback of the dirt horses don't like it, and you can put them on the turf, and there's not as much kickback. It's not as painful of a sting. So there again with Chamberlain Bridge, I think one of the reasons it made him a good turf horse was pedigree, but also he hit four white feet. And that's the only thing that we really battled during his career was some quarter cracks here and there and tender feet. And I think that's another reason he thrived on the turf.
You mentioned the four white feet. People often talk about the shape of the foot. Do you subscribe to that theory? Is there such a thing as a turf foot, and what is it?
Not from my experience. It really hasn't been. They've all shapes, sizes, and forms, body styles, feet. It's strange. And I think pedigree does play heavily into it on grass horses. But I've also had horses that had no turf pedigree at all and have run very, very well on it. I think it's one of those things you just have to try.
What role, if any, does running style, particularly speed, play in terms of success on the turf? Obviously, in sprint races, it's going to be a little bit more important, but does it have a role as well in longer turf races?
Well, what's been really key, I think, in turf races is turn of foot. It's amazing. You can see these dirt horses, kind of grinders, just, you know, good cruising speed and just keep grinding it out, but don't really have a turn of foot. A lot of times those horses won't do very well on the turf. I think they have to have a real turn of foot to win races on the turf. A lot of times it's, especially in route races, it's a little slower paced and it's a sprint home, kind of somewhat similar to some of the European racing. Obviously, with the good horses, you have to have speed, no matter if you're going short or long, dirt or turf. But I think a high turn of foot is pretty key in turf racing.
Do you train turf horses any differently than other horses? And is there something different in the workouts that people might look at when they're looking at horses in the past performances going into grass races?
Really don't train them a lot differently. The only thing you have to be aware of with training grass horses, you're training them on the dirt most of the time. We don't get the opportunity to breeze them, give speed works on the turf very often. And a lot of times these turf horses don't put their best foot forward on the dirt in the morning training. So you're always concerned about fitness sometimes. So you maybe want to train those horses a little differently, maybe put a few more miles in them, work them a little farther. The grass sprinters for me have been very, very easy. You're going five, five and a half. You know, you can keep them fit pretty easily. But the two-turn horses, I think, can be an issue because you don't get a lot of them out of them in the morning in their breezes. Sometimes they just don't care for it and won't put a lot of effort into it.
And finally, I've heard that turf racing can sometimes take less out of a horse, that they can recover more quickly. Do you find that to be true?
Absolutely. I think they bounce out of turf races better. They come out sounder, I believe, a lot of times. It's just not near as hard on them. And therefore, I think they come out of it a little fresher.
We sure appreciate your time, and you do have a knack with those horses, but other types as well. Appreciate it, Brett.
Thank you.
And there you have it, straight from the trainer's mouth. Brett Calhoun, Breeders' Cup winner on the grass, giving you some insight on what he looks at in potential turf horses, something you'll need when you handicap Kentucky Downs and beyond. That will wrap up our show tonight on how to handicap Kentucky Downs. We want to thank all of our guests and also Dean Jerry Schottenkirk for handling things in the live chat tonight going on while the podcast premiered live. We want to remind you that upcoming night school events include next week when we talk about new racing technologies in the handicapping sphere, and we'll look at the new product on the market, the Stats Race Lens presented by Equibase, and other products on the market. So new technologies in handicapping, the topic next week as we return on September the 13th for night school's fall semester. On behalf of Jerry Schottenkirk, the Dean, all of our guests tonight, Gary West, John Lees, Dick Downey, and our night school archives from Brett Calhoun and Bob Neumeier, I'm Jeremy Plunk. Have a great night, everybody, and enjoy yourselves at the track.